Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where each episode we talk about our favorite superhero team, the mighty Doom Patrol.
Hi, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And if you want to send emails to the show, that's waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we're on Facebook in the usual way that things are on Facebook. And there's a website, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, that has the posts supporting our show. And all our many, many episodes are available on, in some cases, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and all of them are definitely on podbean.com.
Yes. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod.
Hello, humans.
And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, and this week I've been looking on the site and there's new announcements from DC. There's a thing called DC Inc. and DC Zoom, which are both imprints focused on the young adult and middle grade audiences. And what's exciting about that is they have promo art for one of the DC Inc. titles, and there's Beast Boy front and center.
Nice.
On a crowded train, looking quite cheeky. He's he's got a bag with a puppy and a rabbit in it.
Right.
And it's standing near him is Raven, who looks fairly irritated.
Right.
So, the puppy, awesome art.
The animals in the bag are in separate bodies, right? They're not. He's not doing animals.
It's a regular bag of animals.
Right. Okay. Right.
Looks like there's some sort of animal around his neck as well, though. It's hard to tell in the coloring. Could be a dragon. I'm not sure.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But, yeah, awesome art by Gabriel Piccolo, which is presumably from one called, where is it? The Teen Titans, written by Cammy Garcia, who I've never heard of. I haven't heard of any. I'm not a young adult. I'm the opposite. I'm an old child. So, yeah, I don't know any of these creators.
Old child. I like that.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm 50 this year, Mike, so I'm having all sorts of emotional issues at the moment.
Oh dear. So, wow.
Yeah. You know, your inner view of yourself and your outer view, and they're not meshed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-mm.
Yep.
Everything's grey and immature.
Wow. I look forward to that.
Anyway, how has your week been, Mike? Your 2 weeks?
I'd like to tip my hat to whoever invented the saying that moving house is an extremely stressful time in one's life, because bloody hell, it sure has been. For those that aren't aware, my partner Kylie and I finally found a place for us to move into together with the boys, which is great. Very nice house in a very nice suburb, you know, well serviced, lots of shops nearby. But we found out that we got it right before Australia Day, so the tail end of January. So I celebrated Australia Day by starting to move.
Hey.
So that was a Friday. So I had to be out by the following Wednesday of my place. So that's what, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That's like 6 straight days of moving stuff to family and friends and a storage space. Then I've been staying at Kylie's place up until yesterday when we got the keys, and I'm now in the new house. So if my audio sounds a little bit different, that's because I'm in the brand new WFD studios here in Brisbane. and so that the house, it's got all my furniture in. Kylie's still got a few more weeks at her current place before she moves all her stuff in here. So it's a bit of a weird leapfrogging situation. So but now I have to get all my other stuff back from family and friends and storage spaces, which is going to be fun. Not really.
Awesome.
No, it's not.
Living the dream.
Living something. Living something. That's all I've been doing. I literally have not had a chance to read anything. I did buy some comics, though. A couple of issues of Black Science are waiting for me. And I bought some old issues of Detective Comics. So, you know, the to-read pile continues to grow, although it's spread out amongst different places at the moment, which is sad. So that's been my couple of weeks. What have you been up to, Paul?
I've been travelling around and having a bit of a holiday, but I did take some comics with me, so I did my DC OCD reading for the next two episodes. But one thing I did read was Astro City, the recent trade. It's kind of weird, but I was getting the hardcovers and they got too expensive, and then I switched to the trade. So I've sort of some people who are OCD in that way would be having heart attacks that I have, you know, all these hardcovers and then I've got a few trades in the same run. But Astro City Reflections, which was a fantastic story in that. So for those of you who don't know, Astro City is a world of superheroes written by Kurt Busiek with Brent Anderson, and they have awesome covers by Alex Ross. But yeah, it's basically a world of superheroes, and it's very much like if one person was completely in charge of the DC universe or the Marvel universe and was telling the story of the whole universe through vignettes and, you know, focusing on different characters, etc. But it also happens in real time. So, I mean, he's been writing this book since the 90s, so, you know, characters get old. Like, what's it like for a superhero couple? You know, like they're sort of very similar to Green Arrow and Black Canary. When you're old and you're trying to fight crime and everything hurts and things like that. Or, you know, and there was one story in this trade, which I thought was the best Astro City story probably since first few years of the book, but it was about a retired villain. He just gets involved with someone's been framing old villains and doing crimes with their old equipment.
Oh.
But it just went into the whole... this underworld where, you know, super villain equipment is memorabilia and it's traded and, you know, and repaired and, you know, it's outlasting criminals. You know, people have died, but their equipment is still in the mix and being used. And it's just fantastic and so such a great story and so clever. So, yeah, really enjoyed that. It was one of the best Astro City books I've read in ages. And, yeah, that's made me double down on Astro City, and I'll keep getting them. But they've just announced the end of it in issues, but they're going to continue it in graphic novels. So.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, okay. So I'm in for that.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that's what I had.
Awesome. Well, at least one of us has had a more enjoyable time, so to speak. Speaking of enjoyable things... How about we go and have a look at what's going down on Darrington Way?
Sure.
Hooray.
Hey. Okay, so if we're going to look at what's happening in Darrington Way, there's only one place to look right now, and that is Nick Darrington's Twitter account, which is just coming up. Yeah, a few people getting Doom Patrol tattoos, I've noticed.
Mm.
Someone got a really sweet Hero at the Beach tattoo. That's
yes, awesome. I saw that. That was very cool.
Yeah. And there was one of Robot Man, which is straight out of issue 2, where he's punching out those the Vectras. That's terrific. But here we go. There's a picture online, and it's Batman, as in the Batman,
yes.
Flex Mentallo, and Fug, as in the Fug. And it looks like a partial panel of a comic. So... That would imply that there's a bit of Batman coming up in Doom Patrol in the future.
Ooh.
You don't have Flex and Batman in the same and Fug in the same picture normally, do you?
No. My guess is that it would be part of Milk Wars.
I didn't know if he was actually doing the art for Milk Wars, but it does look like there is the Ray in the background, you know, sort of nestled behind Flex. So I'm looking forward to that.
That'll be cool. Yeah.
That'll be cool. Other than that, there's not a lot of news, except for Milk Wars being the new hotness, and we're going to cover that today.
Yes.
Hot milk.
Refreshing.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Okay.
Is that ticking?
It is, thankfully. Thank goodness that... segue worked so well.
So good we've got a way to get out of an awkward segment like that.
And no one notices that we're heading straight into the doom clock. So looking upon the face of the Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had in our hands came out 2 weeks ago, issue 10 of volume 6, in which the Patrol fought the Brotherhood of Nada as the effects of the Wonder Food shit caused chaos all around them. And Terry Nunn gave birth to who knows what, as everyone crash-landed into Retcon Industries. God, that was a fun issue.
It was a good one.
That was great. Issue 11 is, at this stage, unless Paul corrects me shortly, it's apparently, allegedly, supposedly, due 14th of March 2018, 5 weeks away.
I have no information to contradict that assertion.
Okay, we'll stick with that. That's good.
At this stage.
This week in Doom Patrol history, though, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for $1.50 American on February 4th of 1992, with a cover date of March of that year, was issue 53 of Doom Patrol Volume 2. Grant Morrison, Ken Stacy, Johnny Workman Jr., and Daniel Vozzo gave us a story titled And Men Shall Call Him Hero.
Ah!
In which Danny the Street has a Kirby-rific dream where the Patrol save the world from Celestius the Man God and his sidekick the Living Guru. And given the nods to Kirby and a certain Fantastic Foursome in that issue, it only made sense that we were joined by Steve Lacey of the Fantasticast podcast to cover that issue way back in episode 70 from September of 2016. Remember that one?
Oh, that was a while back, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was good fun.
I
think what made it good is that Steve wasn't aware of the story at all. But as he read it, he was picking up all the Fantastic Four bits, which was awesome fun. It was good fun.
Fantastic Four bits.
I think I saw a movie. No, never mind. So if you want to learn more about that issue and hear some really good discussion about it, you can check out episode 70, September 2016. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
You might be wanting Batman's brave deeds, so you go looking for something to read. But there's a pile from Ego to Hush, which trade is great and which to flush. There's a podcast you know you can trust, Bat Books for Beginners, Bat Books for Beginners, Bat Books for Beginners, Bat Books for Beginners. Do 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 do.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining, where we take a deep dive into something Doom Patrol related. And this episode, it's part one of Milk Wars, featuring JLA and Doom Patrol. Oh, it's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. Written by Steve Orlando and Gerard Way. Aso, I'm not sure on the pronunciation of that. Did the art? Let's say Aiko.
Aiko.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay,
Aiko?
No. Aiko. Aiko did the Aok art with help on page 12 by Hugo Petrus. Tamara Bonvillain and Marissa Louise did the colours. Clem Robbins did the letters. There's a special thanks given to David Lorenzo Riviero. Frank Quietly did the cover. And Jamie S. Rich and Molly Mahan were the editors. So, Paul, tell us all about part one of Milk Wars.
Sure. Well, I think I need to do it previously, so let's go with that. So, previously in the Doom Patrol, the latest iteration of the Brotherhood of Evil, now known as the Brotherhood of Nada, has sent the Wonder product shit into the retail world. Their leader, Mr. Nobody, has sent his daughter, Terry Nunn, to infiltrate the latest iteration of the Doom Patrol, becoming the roommate and one-off lover of the fictional hero, Casey Brink. The encounter with Casey, born of fiction, and Terry, born of nobody, in conjunction with the activation of the reality warping shit, that's a sentence I never thought I'd say, has led to the rapid gestation and birth of their child, an omni-blank, which can be imprinted with any fiction. Unfortunately, the omni-blank has fallen into the hands of Retcon, a company that deals in reality overwriting for profit and other more sinister motives. So the comic begins in the Retcon home office. Edward, the guy who looks like a DC staffer from the 80s, is giving a sales pitch for an entire world to an important yet overly dramatic client. The data projector shows a quaint house on view. When asked if he's ready for a private viewing, the client declares he's ready for the deal of his life, and this him is being Lord Manga Khan.
Yes. No, I have to admit, I don't recognize Manga Khan.
Ah, okay. Little comic called Justice League International.
Right. Gala. Okay.
Yep. He is basically in charge of a planetary shopping network.
Right. Okay.
And he came to Earth basically to wheel and deal and take control of the Earth and sell it and things like that. So.
Okay.
So, you know, this is the Bwahaha era.
Yes.
Front and center. So, yeah, he's beloved, and his thing is monologuing. So he often monologues to himself out loud, and he's always surrounded by robots who have pun names like Elron and things like that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So think Galactus, but if he was into shopping.
Okay.
And selling.
Right. Good to know. Okay.
Good to know, yeah. Anyway, so let's continue. At the very cheery house, which is seen on the screen, a cheery milkman arrives with his delivery, and he greets Grady Fox, the man of the house, at the door. And while the Rita Farr show plays on the black and white TV, and the milkman, who we know to be Milkman Man due to all the promo stuff, makes his way through the house, force-feeding his milk to the entire family, including their pet dog. Nearby, and later, the quiet of the neighborhood is shattered by the arrival of Danny the Ambulance, containing the members of the Doom Patrol, who pile out into the street. They have pursued a rocket launched by Retcon to this location in Happy Harbor, Rhode Island, which is the current base of the Justice League of America, or JLA, as it's called in this iteration. And it's the one time a base for the previous version of the Doom Patrol. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Hmm. The team, which is Casey Brink, or Space Case, as she's known, Cliff Steele, Robot Man, Negative Man, who's also known as Larry Trainer, and Keeg, who's the Negative Energy, Flex Mentallo, with no alternate code name, Crazy Jane, and Fug, the little critter, soon discover the Milky Mayhem in the Fox House. Of particular concern is the triffidish blob-like creature with udder arms. The family are recovered and up and timidly tell the team to leave their grandmother alone, the creature with the udders, and they've called the neighborhood watch. And the first member of the watch arrives, and it's Carl Lobo, which is basically Lobo wearing with his hair slicked back, wearing a cardigan with a bow tie and smoking a pipe. Bloody Carl Lobo, who takes issue with Cliff's hostility, resulting in Cliff flying through the wall into the street. Meanwhile, back at the Retcon offices, Edward is continuing the sales spiel to Manga Khan. Retcon smooths the idiosyncrasies off Earth through controlling the source of heroes from Mount Justice and through the use of their special milk. If anyone has any type of contact with the milk, they can be controlled and adjusted. And to illustrate this, as he talks, we see the Rita Farr show is being invaded by a bazooka-toting cow who murders Rita's co-star and kidnaps Rita for narrative readjustment. Back in Happy Harbor, Milkman Man returns, as well as the Community League of Rhode Island, which is a prim and proper and conservatively dressed version of the JLA, which is made up in this iteration of Vixen, the Ray, the Atom, Killer Frost, and Black Canary. And Carl Lobo is also a member of that team. Larry's attempt to engage in conversation leads to him being knocked flying by Mari, who's Vixen, and she's channeling Rhino strength. So they are the JLA, but they're dressed very conservatively and talking very proper and very much, you know, think, you know, the conservative mothers who try to ban everything. That's a bit what they're channeling here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Edward continues spruiking to Manga Khan, explaining their superhero modification process using the schematic of the dead god of superheroes, killed by Danny the Brick in one of the earlier issues. Not deliberately by Danny the Brick, but Danny was used as a weapon by the disappointment.
Yes.
Anyway, and they have an evolutionary tree of heroes, and which shows the path of heroes in evolution and being designed. And so at the top of the tree, you have like Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. And then further down, you have spin-offs of them, basically, like Green Arrow. Anyway, so they make changes. So their plan is to make changes to these superhero designs to broaden their appeal and make them less edgy. Except Superman, who was too iconic, so they created their own version of him, Milkman Man, out of nothing.
Mm.
Mm. Jane and Cliff recognize that they're getting whipped by the JLA, but she has no plans for this to be another Codsville, which is an awesome reference to the death of the Doom Patrol in Volume 1, where they protected Codsville and they all got bombed.
Mm.
Yeah. And in her head, a train is coming, bringing a solution. One of her personalities able to paint fiction into reality. So she establishes that this Doom, the JLA have just been overwritten, so maybe they can be painted into a different reality. And that is done. So all the JLA members, they see comic versions of their first appearances in front of them, and that reasserts their subverted identities. Except Milkman Man, who isn't actually Superman. And confronted by the Action Comics number one first appearance of Superman, he rejects it. He was sent to Maggie Bell Milk Corporation executives, and they raised him, and that's, and he wasn't a child, and so it doesn't mesh with the Superman origin. And when he sees the JLA reverted to normal, he freaks out, yells, "Leave me alone," and runs away. Yeah. The two teams get acquainted and bond, and Black Canary vaguely recalls the Doom Patrol from an earlier iteration, and there's lots of interactions between the teams and conversations, very much in the style of JLA. But these conversations are interrupted by the arrival of Cave Carson's cybernetic eye, which is running free outside of his body, and it shows them a hologram of Cave, who tells them that he sent the eye to the places where all the concentrations of alterations were, and to find help. After he and Swamp Thing, they found the retconned interdimensional headquarters, and the two teams agree to help, and the eye zaps them away. Wow, what a comic, Mike.
It's a bit out there, but it's also lots of fun, which is fantastic. Yeah. I got to admit, I was a bit surprised that Milkman Man turned out to not be Superman.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bait and switch there, wasn't it?
Because I guess going off the promo art with Milkman Man and the sanitized version of Batman as a priest and Wonder Woman as a housewife sort of figure, yeah, I just assumed that the Trinity themselves were going to get super sanitized.
Yeah, but it turns out that Milkman Man is actually Casey and Terry's child, the Omniblank.
Mm. Yeah.
Which was basically a nothing that you could imprint on.
Yeah. I think my only real issue with this issue, and it probably won't make any difference to those that aren't reading the Doom Patrol but are just coming in to Milk Wars itself, is the line where the patrol turn up in Happy Harbor and Jane says, you know, isn't this where Retcon sent their rocket?
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe if issue 11 had been on time, we would have had that scene take place already.
Yeah, that seems to be the most obvious hiccup between the narratives.
Yeah. So I'm guessing when Milkman Man reads, you know, Action Comics and sees Superman's origin, I'm assuming that Retcon have launched, you know, the Omniblank as a rocket into Happy Harbor there, similar to how Kal-El was sent from Krypton in a rocket.
So. Yeah. But this comic, I mean, it is beautifully meta, isn't it? Like it is.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, once again, we have the Doom Patrol in a situation where people are trying to literally homogenize heroes to make them less edgy and, you know, more wholesome and, you know, less weird. And, you know, this is very well-trod ground for the Doom Patrol under Morrison and Pollock runs, particularly. Very interesting way of doing it. And I mean, we have to really give a shout out to the art in this issue. Like, it has a cover by Frank Quitely, which, you know, a lot of people get super excited by Quitely covers, but the insides are just as good.
Oh, yeah. They're
amazing. Like, Ako, or whatever you want to say. I've seen his earlier stuff. Like, he did the Midnighter and Apollo series with Steve Orlando.
Yep.
And he did some Nick Fury stuff with James Robinson that was really good. Mm-hmm. But this stuff is next level. Like, he's really, like, this, he's a superstar. I presume it's he. You know, but this comic, I mean, the way the sound effects are incorporated into the art and the layouts and, you know, there's just no skimping on any of it. And, you know, it's just beautiful. It's so well done. And the whole thing is brought so well, you know, it's so vivid and wonderfully, alive because of the color.
Yeah, exactly. When the Community League of Rhode Island turn up, just their page alone with Mari, you know, Vixen standing at the front, you know, they look awesome, even though they look really straight out of the 50s or something.
Yeah. And right down to they're having their own logo in the text.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really fun issue. It's very meta. I read a comment somewhere that said it's a bit of a love letter to DC Comics history as well. I mean, you've got Mr. Fox, you know, Gardy. That has to be Gardner Fox.
Yeah,
you know, at the start, and there's a small panel later on which has to be a young Steve Orlando and Gerard Way, you know, poring over comics, and there's a poster of Doom Patrol 18 hanging up on the wall. You know,
and that's prompted by Larry having a dream that he created a comic company.
Yeah,
and sure, then Cliff said, "Well, who would have thought up this one?"
And as you said, the mention of Codsville, that was so cool.
Yeah.
As they realize they're losing the fight, and Robot Man says to Jane, you know, I ain't looking to repeat the Codsville maneuver. Jane yells back, no one's doing a Codsville. I've got a plan.
Yeah. And I mean, I've read a fair bit of JLA with Steve Orlando, and one thing that he does incredibly well is sort of tap into existing bits of the DC universe from previous, you know, decades and bring it in really naturally. Like, he's used, you know, characters from Bloodlines, and, you know, he's using Aztec at the moment and things like that, you know. So he's a man who obviously knows his DC comics and, you know, loves them, and, you know, he wants to use them and, you know, trot out all the interesting toys, not just the big guns and the weird, you know, the things that are really well known, but the stuff that's obscure and cool and, you know, like putting in a reference to Thea Jost in the JLA and, Thea Jost, the sponsor of the Doom Patrol in Volume 3.
Mm. Yeah. I do like...
That's a character that's never been seen since.
Yeah, I love his dialogue in this. It doesn't feel forced, and I know I've only read like the first trade of his JLA, but it just the dialogue between the different characters just seems really natural. It doesn't seem forced. Yeah. And I would hope, I know it makes me want to read more about the characters that I haven't read a lot of, like the JLA. I need to get caught up on that because it's just a cool team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other things that I really noted and enjoyed in this was Casey is like, she is using her habit of being early as a superpower in a fight. So, Milkman Man can't get her because she's always early. You know, I thought she was always on time, but here she's always early. So look at that. So that was her ambulance driving powers before, but you know, now it's super useful in a battle.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. So
she also has a really awesome line right near the end of the issue, where it's Killer Frost, Caitlin, sort of having her thoughts on one side of the page and Casey's on the other. And Casey says, sometimes the sweet spot is smack dab in the middle between the utterly bizarre and the positively brave. And I just thought that summed it up, this issue in particular, and the patrol as well. It just summed the whole thing up really well, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm like you. I'm not sure how this will go with someone who hasn't read the Doom Patrol. But I think the gorgeousness of the art could really carry it. Yeah. I mean, I did hear one criticism that someone thought this would have been better with the real Justice League. You know, the more iconic Justice League.
I
think it's good having like the team of the JLA is it's diverse. It has gay people and people of color and an Asian and things like that. So having them all sort of homogenized like this, I think is actually more powerful than heroes who are already kind of easily homogenized themselves. You know, like the very white Justice League.
Yeah. I wonder if there was ever the intent to maybe use the main Justice League, and the powers that be probably said, no, this is a little bit too weird. And maybe sort of pushed them gently to the side and said, go and find someone else to use instead. Yeah. And then Steve Orlando's on JLA and he's just gone, sure, these guys will work. And they do. It's so cool seeing Lobo just having a chat with Robot Man. That was awesome to me. And there's a panel later on where Lobo's got his arm around Cliff, and I love that image. That's so cool.
Yeah. But, I mean, it does seem to me like the Lobo in JLA is quite mellow compared to the earlier Lobo.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, he's much more of a team player and, you know, willing to get on with people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I love this that Casey loses a boot in the battle, and, you know, the second half of the book, she hasn't got a boot on for the whole fight. Just little things like that.
Yeah.
And every time there's a sound effect in this book, it's, you know, it's just incorporated brilliantly in the background and, you know, it's, you know, and borders are getting broken here and there, and there's, you know, parallel layouts like the page where Larry gets smacked at the top of the page and then the bottom of the page, it's Keeg doing the same thing back at them, you know. Oh, it's so good.
It's a really well done comic. But I agree with you, people that haven't been reading Doom Patrol might be a little bit lost, because I think the foundations for Milk War have been seeded since issue one.
Absolutely. Like the God of Heroes.
Yeah.
And Final Heaven, that's in the back of the first issue.
Yeah.
Those two concepts. So, you know, people playing a long game here. We're calling 10 issues or 11 issues a long game.
Well, it seems that way because it's taken a long time for them to come out. But anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, very handy to see the first appearances of all these characters in the comic itself.
Yeah, so, that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the first appearance of the Ray, and I've got the first appearance of Lobo, and I've got the first appearance of the Atom. But the others, I don't have Action Comics number one. I'm just pointing that out.
Okay. So you've ticked a few off your checklist, but not all of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's the new 52 Firestorm. That's cheating.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
The other little thing I love, talking about little touches, when there's that giant fight scene going on and, you know, the Ray's fighting Fug and Flex is doing his Hero of the Beach thing and knocking Carl Lobo and his pipe into the sky. And, you know, the next page, it's got Black Canary doing her shriek. And there's Negative Man curled up in the corner of the page, zonked out.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very keen to see how the rest of Milk Wars plays out and how the rest of Young Animal are going to play with the DCU.
Yeah, well, chronologically, it looks like the Cave Carson Swamp Thing issue has already happened at this point in this story. So
yeah.
It's interesting. So, yeah. But, yeah, it's good stuff, isn't it?
It is.
And there's a bonus. There's a backup for Eternity Girl.
Yes. By
Magdalene de Visaggio. And who's the artist?
Sunny Liu. Yes.
Sunny Liu. So, and that's fantastic homage to, you know, sort of 50s comics. It, you know, really captures the look and feel.
Very much so, yes.
Except something fairly nasty happens to the main character.
That's always the way in those old comics, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, we probably won't cover every single part of Milk Wars, but we will definitely cover the final part, which is JLA Doom Patrol. Well, this was Doom Patrol slash JLA. The next one is JLA slash Doom Patrol.
Yep.
So we are super looking forward to that. Now, is there anything else you want to add?
No, I'm very happy with it. I'm keen for the rest of the story. Hopefully it will not be delayed in any way. If it is.
Hmm. But no, I don't think it will be.
Yeah. I'm hoping... I'm going to stay positive and think, yeah, it's all going to ship on time and it'll all be great. So, yeah.
Well, I will say that this exceeded my expectations. I was like, yeah, I'm a bit, 60% on looking forward to this. And when it came out, I was immediately stunned but to see Manga Khan. He is a character that is a really big deal to people who love the Bwahaha era of the JLA.
Okay.
Shout out to Shag, who does the podcast about mm-hmm. it. So, yeah, seeing him was very exciting. And I hope he actually has a more of a role in the series as opposed to just being the person getting the sales pitch through every part.
Yes.
But, I'm quite excited about this. I think it'll make if it continues this level of quality, it's going to make a super trade.
I do have one question for you, though.
Sure.
You've been reading some of the other young animal titles, yes?
Yes, I've read the first trades of all of them.
Okay, so is it safe to assume that none of this stuff has even been seeded in those at all?
Well, Rita Farr TV show has definitely been seeded in The Shade, The Changing Girl.
Oh, okay, yes.
So, yeah, and I haven't got far enough into Cave Carson that I haven't read the second trade, which is out now, mm-hmm. To see if anything else came up. But, it's possible that I missed it just because I didn't know what I was looking for in them. But I don't think anything was in Mother Panic that I saw. But,
okay.
Definitely Shade the Changing Girl had some stuff. And it's obvious that Rita Farr is a very important character in the background of, this comic and Doom Patrol and Show the Changing Girl. So, interesting to see how that plays out and whether we end up with, the Rita we know and love, Elastic Girl Rita being part of the team at the end of all this, or whether she'll be like a, elder statesman for them or just, an advisor or something. So, I'm kind of thinking, a Maggie Dench sort of role with them or something.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, but I love my Rita young and vital, but if they need to make a, an older lady to, make all this continuity stitched together at the end of this, I'm very keen to see it. I mean, and we do know that Milk Wars is going to prompt a new, change to reality that will influence all the young animal books moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exciting times.
Mm. Exciting.
Mm. Yes. Cool. All dooms planned out?
Yeah, I'm all doomed out, all dooms planned out, but ready for the mailbag.
Awesome. Let's go.
And now it's time for the mailbag at Doom, where we are going to tackle the question of the week answers that we requested last time on Waiting for Doom. And the question we asked people is, who is your favourite backup team for a comic book character? So, we heard from, on Facebook, we heard from Andrew Watton Davies, who said Damage Control, as its existence finally explained why New York City hadn't fallen apart. So that's the backup for the entire Marvel Universe as such.
Nice. We then heard from Max Traver, who said the Legion of Superheroes, the Legion of Super Pets, the Legion of Substitute Heroes, and the not much of a Legion because there's only three of them, Warriors 3. Also, the entire Green Lantern Corps. Sorry, couldn't pick just one.
Fair enough. Covering spaces there, Max.
Yeah, yeah.
We heard from Doug Zavisha, who at DZavisha on Twitter, he said, the Zoo Crew, partially because I was shamed from answering the Outsiders. Did I shame him? I'm sorry.
I think you did, Paul.
Zoo Crew, backup Captain Carrot.
Yes. We then heard from Clinton at Coffin Comics blog, who said, the Zoo Crew for Captain Carrot, I guess. Shrug. I mean, I wanted to say Outsiders, but nobody seems to want me to. Wait. Never mind. I rethought my answer and have the best one. And he gave us an image from the cartoon Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends with Iceman and I think it was Firestar was her name.
Could be. It's like the unlike the cartoon about my life with Paul and his average friends.
Oh, thanks.
No, it's about my early years.
Right, right.
Yes. We heard from And, Dr. And 70, one of our favourite doctors. One of the favourite doctors. Anyway, he said, if the Legion counts, when the book was Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, it's them. If not, and he put up Superboy and the Ravers, which hats off to you for going there. That's like, yeah, that's a real shameful answer.
I must admit, because I'm not much of a fan of the Superman family of books, I have no idea who the Ravers were.
I remember when this comic came out and I just looked at the title and went, nah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the money to buy that one and I didn't. I'm sorry.
Right. We then got a stack of answers from Tim Price at TimPrice17. The first being, can I say that the Troubleshooters from Spitfire and the Troubleshooters are not my favourite backup team?
Sure, bit of new universe.
Mm. He then said about the West Coast Avengers, I think this book was planned to be called Hawkeye and the West Coast Avengers, but got changed at the last minute. He then suggested, ooh, how about the Freedom Fighters, as in Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters.
Yeah.
He then said, does anyone remember Wolverine's backup group? Giving us an image of Wolverine and the X-Men. And finally he said, and how could I forget the Future Force, another FF backup group? Weird.
What?
Future Force from Valiant. My Valiant reading is minuscule.
Yes.
So, okay. Sure.
Yeah. We heard from Bobgar Ornelis, Slurmo, and he said, Superboy and the Legion of Motherfucking Superheroes, baby.
Right.
Thank you for making me swear, Bobka.
Oh, look, it's Tim Price again.
Oh, Tim.
And he
doing a frack.
he's out frack. And this time he said, this book started as a pitch to expand Captain America's comic into a team book. Obviously, that didn't happen, but must have on Earth Eclipse, I think he meant to say, but he typed Earth Marlips. So, and it's a comic called The Liberty Project, which I'd never heard of.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's from Eclipse, but originally it was meant to be a Marvel book.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, okay. Interesting. That looks pretty terrible. But, I mean, a lot of things did in the 80s, didn't they?
Yeah.
The girl does not look like a young girl. She just looks like a tiny person. Like on a different scale. Anyway. Yeah. And no one should wear tassels in superhero garb. I'm sorry. All right, let's move on. We heard from Steve Lacey from the Fantastic Cast, as we were talking about before. And he said, the mid-90s when Batman's supporting team included Oracle, Alfred, Leslie Tompkins, and Harold. So he's talking about not a proper team, but just a loose knit team. All Grant Morrison's JLA, where Oracle coordinated every superhero on Earth to combat Magadon, which was totally fucking awesome. I could swear again. What is it? I'm the one who doesn't swear.
Yeah, normally I have all the expletives coming out of me. It's your time to shine. Ryan Daly at RyanDaly01 pitched in with The Howling Commandos for Sergeant Fury and Easy Company for Sergeant Rock. Nice.
Oh, nice choices.
Yeah.
Classic. We heard from Martin Gray at Mark Gray, and he said, there's Sensational Subs, which is the Legion of Substitute Heroes, the people who weren't good enough for the Legion of Superheroes. It was like that. If you were rejected from the Legion of Superheroes, you either became a villain or a substitute.
Right.
Yeah. But some of the subs did make it good in the end and graduate to the big league.
Eventually.
Including Polar Boy, who actually led the Legion at one point.
Nice.
Educational and boring.
Jimmy McGlinchey chimed in with Section 8 from Hitman.
Oh, high five, Jimmy.
Yep. Nice work, Jimmy.
Well done. Keith G. Baker at KG Bunk on Twitter. He said the Green Lantern Corps for Hal Jordan with a couple of pictures of the Green Lantern Corps to emphasize his answer. Very nice.
Sean AZ at Sean42AZ or Z, as some people like to say. He said, I would have to say the Outsiders for Batman. There you go.
You wouldn't have to.
Now.
Okay. Then we heard from Chloe at Fayette Vamp, and she said probably Dixie and Pendragon for Vampy, though Dushan and the Spawlings for Ivy are on my list. So it's a bit of Vampirella and a bit of Poison Ivy. So nice. I'm not familiar with any of those.
No, nor am I.
No, whenever I read Vampirella, it's just her in a skimpy outfit.
Right. And finally, we heard from Ryan Fennelly at Ryan F. Fennelly on the Twitters. And he said, Etta Candy and the Holiday Girls.
Oh.
I'm aware of Etta. I wasn't aware of the Holiday Girls.
They go back away. There's a version of them in the Grant Morrison Wonder Woman Earth 1.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Nice. That's a nice old reference there. Mm. Very good. Very good, Ryan. Welcome to the show. What about you, Mike? What's your one?
I haven't really thought of one because I've been moving house for what seems like eternity. I'm going to say the Green Lantern Corps. Yes, because they backed up Hal and John and Guy but they also had their own things going on, and I kind of preferred seeing the stories of the other Green Lanterns in outer space, not so much focused on the umpteen bloody Earth-based ones. So, but when they all came together to support the Earth-based Lanterns, it was always really cool. You know, saving the day, you know, creating cool things with their power rings. They were awesome. Yeah. How about you?
I've got to go with the Outsiders. I think they're a terrific theme. I was just trying to warn people off from my answer early so I could have it to myself. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I weirdly enough, I do like the 2000s version of the Outsiders. So,
okay.
Yeah, when it wasn't always Batman's team. But, you know, anything with Metamorpho, I'm there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're legitimately saying the Outsiders?
Yeah, but don't judge me.
I just find it an interesting choice, given your previous comment. Right. Okay. Jeez. Oh, dear. Well, that's pretty much us for this episode. Next time on the feed, we'll have episode 2 of DC OCD, where we will be looking at Legends. And then the episode after that, 118 of Waiting for Doom. We'll be back with Milk Wars Part 5, looking at the JLA and Doom Patrol again.
That's exciting.
Mm. And we will have a new question of the week for the next Waiting for Doom. What is that question, Paul?
Well, according to what I wrote, it's what comic character looks best in bulk and white? But I think I meant to write black and white.
That's the safe assumption, yes.
So let's go with that. So who looks really good in black and white?
Okay. Yeah. Now, are we talking in the art style of it just being black and white, or their costume has to be black and white, or either?
Oh, I didn't think of that. I was thinking the art style looks really good in black and white, but if you want to go with someone who wears black and white, like Moon Knight, you could probably say that if you wanted to. Yeah.
Okay.
Or, yeah. So, but a comic character doesn't have to be a superhero. Could be a supervillain or a supporting cast member of a team.
Someone from the Outsiders.
It could be Jimmy Olsen. Who knows?
Right. Okay.
I don't think anyone will say Jimmy Olsen.
Probably not. Although they will now that you've said that.
Yeah, probably. Jimmy Olsen looks fantastic in black and white, everyone. Let's agree on that. But you don't have to focus on it, okay?
Right. Thanks for clarifying.
Thanks.
Okay. So as always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can get in touch via the Waiting for Doom Facebook page or via Doug's excellent posts on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. We'll catch you all again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
waiting for Doom.